This is Mary Jane, and I'm at Fiesta del Sol in Solana Beach with Keith Roberts.
Get up! Well, if McKay, your old, your base, your brutal low, your old disgrace, and then was Williams stormed your plate, sent you to the fern.
Hello, I'm Keith Roberts from the Young Dubliners. I'm the singer of this particular band. On a good day.
So for anyone who's not familiar with how your band got started, would you mind giving a brief history?
Yeah, it was somewhat accidental. We basically were a couple of Irish guys living in Los Angeles, and St. Patrick's Day was coming around, and everybody told us that if we knew how to sing Irish songs, we could probably get a gig and make some money. So I didn't really know that many Irish traditional stuff. I knew mostly rock stuff, so I learned a bunch of traditional stuff, and my mate Paul learned the rest of them. He knew a lot more than I did, actually, but I didn't drink quite as much as he did, so I ended up singing most of them due to the fact that he'd be passed out for the second set. And then we became, slowly but surely, turned into an original band and writing our own stuff, and Paul actually left the band a little while after that, and we went on then, and now we're 6 or 7 albums, I think. Been on the road since 1993, and just brought out a new album this year, the first cover album we've ever done, but we decided to do all the Irish songs that we sort of began doing, and ones that we've done one on each album. Really pretty much just stuck to one, and we decided to get all those together and a few other ones, and we made this what's called, with all due respect, the Irish Sessions, and sort of a little nod to the great Irish songwriters. And that's what we're touring on right now, and why we're here in beautiful Solana Beach.
So you're originally from Ireland then, right?
Yeah.
What made you decide to move to the States?
I can't discuss that without my lawyer. No. It wasn't that bad. No, I'd actually just graduated college, and I was thinking about being a journalist, and it just seemed like a good place to come to do an internship. And so I actually did an internship with KCET up in Los Angeles for a while, and realised I absolutely hated that. And then I went on to do a million other things that eventually led me then. The band was sort of part-time, and I was interning, then I was working on movie sets, you know, PA and all the different things you do when you're in LA, until eventually I bought a pub and was actually playing every Saturday night in our bar in LA in Santa Monica. It was where we got their first record deal. Mm-hmm. And it sort of went from there.
Are there any noticeable differences between Irish and American music?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny because, I mean, Irish music is usually considered Irish traditional folk music. And then Riverdance obviously brought a whole big, you know, awakening of what Irish traditional music and dance could be. What we always tried to do, we're a blend of Americans and Irish, and so we've always tried to write and represent a blending of the two. So the Celtic rock that everybody refers to in our genre is really a mixing of Irish rock and Irish traditional music. You know, for example, the Chieftains meeting Thin Lizzy or U2 or something, and then blending that with the American rock experience that the rest of the guys grew up with, and sort of writing with both being represented in various degrees. Every now and again you might have a song that sounds a lot more Celtic, and then another time you'd have a song that's, you know, a lot more rock or pop than the others, but they each have a little bit of both styles, so that you always know it's us, is the idea.
Well, like you said earlier, the Irish Sessions is a cover album. Is there a particular reason why you guys decided to make a cover album, and why did you choose a particular writers to cover?
Well, it was more so because we were between record deals, and I thought it would be the only chance we'd get to do it, because I didn't think a label would be interested in us doing a cover album. And we had just finished with EMI, and we were going to do this independently released cover album just for the fans at gigs. And right before we went to Europe last year on tour, we got signed again to a Warner Brothers company here in the States. And I told them what I wanted to do, and they said, well, we'll release that too, you know, as long as you give us an original one. You know, a year later, we'll do the cover album. So it meant that we had to race back from Europe and go into the studio and record all over Christmas. We only had 17 days to do the whole record from beginning to, you know, from rehearsing to mastering. So the whole thing was done really fast. And I actually think that helped it. I think it's got a good urgency to it, and it has a live feel, because we literally didn't have time to overanalyze or, right, you know, do what you normally do and bring in the whole, you know, should there be a little more flute there, or is that missing a little certain, you know. We played it as best we could, quick as we could, and I went in, sang as quick as I could, and the boys added back. And the only overdubbing we did per se, like after the main recording, was when we overdid the vocals and stuff like that, you know, did the backing vocals and any other ideas, or if I'd messed up the words, which I do a lot. And I certainly did a lot, because some of the songs I'd never sung before, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it was, that was the main reason we chose to do it. And you know, now it's turned out to be one of the best selling records and the most critically acclaimed. And we just signed a record deal in Scandinavia, and we're going there now at the end of the month for another 6 weeks of touring there, all based on this cover album, you know.
Right.
If I'd known that, I'd have done the bloody thing a long time ago, but there you go.
Was there a particular track on there that you're most proud of?
There's a lot of them, really, because I realised when I was doing them that, you know, some of the lyrics were so good. But these fellas, you know, some of them are poems that people had written, you know, 100 years ago, and somebody else put music to. Or else they were, you know, like Follow Me Up to Carlo, one of the opening tracks on the album, is actually written in the 1700s about a battle, you know, around then, which, you know, if you'd read the lyrics, you wouldn't even know what the hell they're talking about. Even though I sing them, I don't really know what the hell I'm saying either. But the sea, the swords of Glenamal, they flash your lord, the English pales, they are the children of the Gael, beneath the warrant's banner. A rooster of a fighting stock, who would you let a Saxon cock out upon an Irish rock, lay up when we treat the manners? Cut the swear, Lord Kildare, Vic will do a vehicle dare, Elvis, will you never care? Falling is a straddle, up with helmet, out with sword, on we go, the boy the Lord, Vic McHugh has given the word, follow me up to Carlo. I like them all for different reasons. That we did a couple of Pogue songs as well, because Shane McGann was a big influence on me, and just about anybody doing Celtic rock of any type was influenced by Shane. The Pogues were really the first ones to really rock it out and punk it up and get it out there. But it's hard for me. I go through different favourites, different time, like shows, because now we're playing them. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, there's one, MacAlpine's Fusiliers, that's a real simple, basic song, and I love it. I don't know why. Myself and Brent, the other Irish fella in the band, we both love that song, and, you know, neither of us could tell you why, other than it just feels good to play.
And down the glen came MacAlpine's men, with their shovels slung behind them. 'Twas in the pub, they drank the sub, and out in the spike you will find them.
Is a band that I've kind of been keeping my eye on since I saw you guys play the PB Block Party a couple years back.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm just wondering, do you prefer an outdoor venue atmosphere to an indoor, or does it not matter?
It really doesn't matter to us. We love gigging, you know, in general. And down here, we've always had the belly up for years, and there's really nowhere better than playing the belly up. You know, it's great because it's a great rock venue, but it's also a bar.
Right.
And you have that vibe in there that you're in a big bar watching a band. But we're known for sort of getting the crowd going at a festival, just because the stuff we do seems to appeal to a wide age group.
Mm-hmm.
And festivals is where we get to play to the kids the most.
Right.
Usually at the venues that are over 21 where we play, they always want to serve a lot of alcohol, and they don't want the pain in the arse of watching out for all the little kids running around, you know. So
mm-hmm.
we always try to get all our gigs to be all ages, but it rarely happens. So we've ended up, we play a lot of music festivals, but we also play a lot of Irish festivals. So, you know, just summertime, usually you'll see us outdoors, and in the wintertime, we're usually doing the club circuits.
So when you were in high school, what were you listening to the most?
That's weird. When I was in high school, we were being bombarded by England with the Top of the Pops. It was the show every Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, you know, when I was growing up, the two bands that were... This was when I was young. The two big names from Ireland were, first of all, the Boomtown Rats, and then U2. And so I remember Boomtown Rats getting a song on Top of the Pops called Don't Like Mondays.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was actually a big hit here, too. Tell me why I don't like Mondays, tell me why. And that was, we were just blown away that a band from Ireland was on Top of the Pops, and number one in England. And that was one of the big ones. And then U2, of course, right after Live Aid, the first Live Aid. I was just getting out of high school when Live Aid, U2 blew us all away. We'd all been sort of mean to U2 up until then. Most Irish people didn't like them. And we realised after Live Aid what a brilliant band they were.
Yeah.
And so from then, I started listening to a lot. But, you know, I was Depeche Mode and Human League, and all those bands were the big bands that we were being bombarded with. I only really gained a love of American music after I came over here. To be honest with you, I'd barely heard of Springsteen. I'd barely heard of, you know, Michael Jackson was the big crossover. You know, he was the Thriller album was out and everybody in the world knew about that. But it's been interesting over the years because a lot of the guys in the band that are American talk about musicians and I'll go, who's that? And they'll say, you don't know Grand Funk Railroad. You know, I'll be like, no, I never heard of Grand Funk Railroad, you know, but everybody here was huge into it. So I've been influenced by a lot of music in America since I got here. But early on, it was a lot of traditional stuff I liked. Going out at night, we all went to pubs where you listened to a lot of trad Irish music. But really, it was England that was the biggest of the Clash. It was a huge band for me. And a lot of those bands called the Skids, Big Country. Big Country was probably the first band that made me. I'd already heard a band called Horselips, who were a bit before my time in Ireland, mixing electric guitars with violins. Mm-hmm. But then when I heard Big Country do the Celtic lines on their electric guitars, it made me realise, holy shit, this could actually be... This could be... You could play rock, you know, so you can write songs and still make them Celtic without them having to be an Irish ballad or something. Mm-hmm. So I'd say Big Country. And I think our last original album, Real World, was where you saw most of those influences come out, where we blended a lot of the American rock with the more of the Celtic rock of Ireland's first bands to sort of add rock and roll to Irish music.
So, like you touched on earlier, you've got a pretty extensive summer tour coming up. Is there a stop that you're looking forward to the most?
It's funny, you know, we always like playing in America, but we've been doing it for years, and now the band is sort of breaking in Scandinavia. And our album was Album of the Week last year at one of the big radio stations there, so they're huge into festivals. You know, you go to Europe, it's all about open air. There's hardly any clubs even open during the summer, so I'm really looking forward to that, even though I'm really looking forward to tonight's show, of course, here in Solana Beach. But we're looking forward to this because it'll be our first time going back there where people hopefully will actually know who we are, and we can actually play in Scandinavia to great crowds with all the big festivals. But like I said, though, we're the kind of band that even though when you're off you're with your family and everything else, there's always that apprehension about getting back on the road and playing again. So whenever we're gigging, we're happiest.
How's your general reception over in Ireland? Do you guys have a good fan base over there?
We've been building it, but it's always been very cost ineffective to go to Ireland because it's a tiny country. You can only sell so many records, and it's always sort of for most bands, it's a fun stop more than a necessity. You know, you have to play London, but you can be a huge band and make a lot of money and never play Dublin. But for me, obviously, it was going home, so I always wanted to do it. So now every year we go to Ireland, but we always bring 100 American fans or 150 fans with us, and they all come. We all fly from Chicago, LA, or New York, and they, you know, buy this trip, come with us, and come on the road for 10 days.
Oh, wow.
And we do about 5 shows all around Ireland, and everybody goes to the shows for free as our guest sort of thing. And then on the days off, we take them on pub crawls and stuff all around, you know, wherever we happen to be. Yeah. This will be the third year, and people are, you know, they mark their calendars early. It's a great laugh.
Yeah.
We're all staying in the same hotel, so every night there's parties up the yin yang, you know, usual stuff.
Well, how does someone get to go on that trip?
You just got to go to the website and fill in the blanks and contact. We got this one travel agent in New York that organizes. So basically, for your one price, you get the flights, the tour bus, the meals, the hotels, and, you know, so you basically just jump yourself, get on the plane, and the rest is handled, you know. And you,
that's pretty
which
awesome.
Which is a good idea because you're usually not much conditioned to look after yourself after being on the road with us for a while.
Well, if the Young Dubliners could collaborate with any musician or band, who would it be?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. We're actually planning on our next album to do that. We're hoping, you know, this will be our album number 8, I think. And not to say we've run out of ideas, but we've sort of run out of the idea of just running in, doing an album of all our own stuff, you know, the same everything that we do all the time. And the label actually had an idea of all the great bands we've toured with and what would it be like to actually get some of them to participate. And so we haven't decided yet, and there's no point in me naming names because they don't even know that we're going to do it yet, but we are hoping to bring in a lot of the bands that we've played with. And they stretch from, you know, singer-songwriters like John Hyatt, who we toured with, all the way up to Collective Soul, who we toured with, and, you know, Colin Hay. Geez, the list is huge at the moment. You know, the boys from Flog of Molly, you know, some of the other bands. Just maybe we're going to just see who's around, who's available, and who would be interested in performing and maybe writing with us and try and make it an album of Young Dubs and Friends kind of thing, mm-hmm. so that we do something different, because at this point we're not chasing the golden egg like we were in the old days, where you know all the rules were there, you wrote pop songs that had to be radio hits and you had to do all this stuff, and we don't feel that way anymore. We feel like we want to do what we want to do, and there'd be nothing more fun than doing something like that and getting to work with the people you respect, mm-hmm. and you enjoy it, and hopefully we've made enough of an impression on them over the years to where they'd actually want to do it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I hope so. You never know.
Since you do have a pub, I was wondering, what is your favorite drinking game?
Well, I used to have a pub. Once we hit the road and we're gone for a couple of years, I had to give up the pub. Mm-hmm. But my favorite drinking game, I don't know, whichever game involves me getting the most drink. Whenever they have games that you lose, you have to drink, you tend to be the big loser. Uh-huh. But we don't really have drinking games, I swear to God. I mean, we'd all go out at night in Ireland, and it was never about drinking, you know, having to be in a game to drink. We just drank because we enjoyed it so much. But I have been involved in some shot games, which have ended up with me speaking in tongues, so we try and the band. I'm not really allowed to play those games anymore.
Okay, where do you see the band in 10 years?
Oh my God, where do I see the band? 10 months would be a better question. I have no idea. I mean, every year we finish an album and finish a tour, we never actually sit down and say, will we quit now? Will we keep going? We just wait and see what happens. And we've gotten, you know, we've had record deals with a lot of majors, and we've had independent record deals, and it never seems to go away completely. So we've just been going with the thing. We love doing it as much now as we did when we started, if not more. So we're not in a hurry to quit, but at some point I'm sure Mother Nature will tell me I can no longer jump around up there. But until then, we're just going to keep going. So 10 years I'll probably be sitting right here doing another interview with you for a lot of beach.
That'd be alright, I'd be down for that. Alright, well, I always ask my musicians the same three questions at the end of interviews. So do you have a slang term that you overuse?
Bollocks.
Yeah, that's a good one, I like it. What's your drink of choice?
Well, usually a pint of Guinness, but it varies in its quality around America, so, and Europe, not just America. Anywhere but Ireland, it can be a bit dodgy. So Guinness usually, but I have been known to slurp many a Heineken too. And of course, Jameson's whiskey when I get a chance, but I'm not allowed to do that anymore either.
All right, and how do you feel about eyeliner?
Looks great on the missus, not too good on me.
All right, do you have any final words or message for your fans listening?
Just don't go through life without a Young Dubliner album. Life is too short. Everybody should have one. I don't even care which one you get. Or get one of them, for the love of God, so I can keep doing what I love to do and not have to get a real job.
In the merry month of May, from almost there to left, the girls at June, nearly broken hearted, saluted father dear. Kiss me, dad and mother, drink a pint of beer. Grief and tears was mothering out to reap the corn, leave where I was born. Cut step the corn to bandage coats, a couple of brand new pair of brooks, rattled over the bug, frightened all the dogs on the rocky road to Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hut the hare and turn her down the rocky road, all the way to Dublin, wax for all the eyes.